Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. Samantha, do you know what the scariest thing you've ever read is?
You know what? I used to scare the hell out of myself with the scary stories in the dark.
Yeah,
the cover alone.
Scary.
Oh my God, I would read all the stories and then not sleep for days. But I loved them.
Yeah, my old roommate and I, Katie. She, in college, we were like the sweetest, dorkiest nerds. And during October, we would light our little jack-o'-lantern, like the little baby one.
No.
And we would take turns reading those to each other.
Oh, you read it out loud. I don't know if I can.
Yeah.
The imagination alone, like for me to see in my head. Because one of some of the stories, like the ribbon around her neck story, really freaked me out. The witch stories always freaked me out. The banshee.
Harold.
The banshee. Oh, my goodness. I was, petrified. That obviously still resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was a movie. Have you seen the movie for it?
I have seen the movie.
Is it worth it?
It depends on what your level of worth it is.
I don't want it to ruin a great memory and a great book, though.
I don't think it would do that, but it's definitely... Like, it didn't scare me at all. I was also very, very drunk responsibly when I saw it in theaters, and I had to rewatch it because I was like, maybe I just wasn't in the right place. And I was like, no.
It's still not that great.
The story didn't really make sense to me. But I mean, you have the option and it's streaming anywhere, I'd say go for it.
Okay.
I don't think it'll ruin it for you.
What is it, something that you've read that's super scary?
I was very, very scared by Pet Sematary by Stephen King. Mm. I remember reading it and just like lying awake and not really sure why I was so scared. And I think that's what he does really well. Is he just sets like a atmospheric tone and you can't really pinpoint why you're so scared. But actually the scariest thing I ever read, and this is so, so me, is a Silent Hill fan fiction. That, like, to this day, I think of it, and I just, my mind is like, don't even think about it.
Oh, no.
Don't. It scared me so badly.
That's amazing.
Yep.
All right. Now
I have never even read a Silent Hill fan fiction since then.
Mm-mm. Really?
Yeah, it scared me. Yeah. Have you ever written anything, like, horror?
No. I am more, like, so my... If I were to write anything, my genre would be a little more like Southern Gothic, tragic type of thing. Mm-hmm. And so not necessarily scary.
Oh, we are talking a lot about Gothic today.
I love Gothic stuff, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you typically write anything scary? I know you do the really sad stuff.
Yeah, that's my go-to is sad.
Yeah.
But I wrote a book called Silence. And it was, I mean, it was pretty typical. Like, it was about a therapist who's, like, through her sessions realizing something's very wrong in this town. And then recently I wrote, there's a new podcast coming out called 13 Days of Halloween. And I wrote 13 stories because I'm an overachiever or a masochist. I don't know. They only chose one. I was only supposed to do one. Right. And I wrote 13.
I was going to say, didn't they say write one and then you wrote 13 and sent them all to them?
Yeah. And they were like, okay, this is great. But we have a lot of stuff to go through. So rank them.
Annie, you're an editor's nightmare.
I know. Believe me, do I know that. So look out for that. It should be interesting. Again, my story is called Red Velvet.
Yes, ooh. It's a good one.
But yeah, today we were talking about women in horror, writing horror, because yes, it is October. And I just love things that are scary, and I'm always ready to talk about these things. And disclaimer, we're going to give a lot of examples in this episode, but we have not read them all. We have not read all the examples we're going to cite, and cannot speak for their depiction of women, race, queer, ableism, all that intersexual stuff. Also, we are focusing largely on horror written in the Western world, but I would absolutely love to come back and do another one. Looking at horror in different places and women writing horror.
I bet it'd be so interesting the legends that they have and the kind of like the folklore that's behind those legends. I would love to hear about that.
Me too.
Because like things like the djinn, oh my goodness, that's scary stuff.
Yeah. And if any listeners has anything we should pursue in that area or any examples to share with us, oh my gosh, please send them in.
Oh yeah. And just to put this in there, we are, for our monthly reading, just to go ahead and let everybody get a heads up, reading The Bloody Chamber. Oh,
yes.
Yeah, which is by a female horror writer. Who is it?
Angela Carter.
Thank you. I was like, Alicia Watts. I don't know.
Nope.
I'm giving her a new name. Yeah, so we were reading The Bloody Chamber by Angela Carter, which is an older horror story.
Yeah.
So if you want to pick that up and join us, just to let you know.
Yeah, and it's pretty short. Neither of us have read it before. Right. So we're going to go on this journey together. Who knows what it will be like.
Who knows?
It was recommended to me by actually past host, Kristen Caroline mentioned it in one of their episodes. So I'm excited to check it out. But in the meantime, all right, let's talk about women in horror fiction. And what exactly is horror fiction? It turns out that that's sort of a difficult thing to pin down. Some people say it's more of an emotion, more of a feeling than a definition. One of the founders of the Horror Writers Association, Robert McCammon, tried to define it in 1986, though, with this. Horror fiction can be a guide through a nightmare world entered freely and by the reader's own will. And since horror can be many, many things that go in many, many directions, that guided nightmare ride can shock, educate, illuminate, threaten, shriek, and whisper before it lets the readers loose.
Well, I like that. And as we've talked about time and time again, horror is often a reflection of what we fear on a societal level. And because we are so afraid of women and women's bodies, as we recently talked about, women are definitely tied to the genre. It makes sense that women authors have been pioneers in writing horror fiction. Despite this, many of the authors that get lifted up as the best in horror are, of course, men. If you look at horror anthologies, out of 15 stories, maybe 1 to 3 are written by women, which is so unfortunate, if any of them are at all.
Right. And I think if you asked the average person to name 3 authors who are writing horror, they would probably all be men.
Yeah, for sure. The top ones in my head for sure come up as men.
Yeah. And many of the accounts of women writing in horror describe not only having difficulty getting published, but this layer of overanalysis when it comes to subtext, both from the reader and the writer. A woman can't just write horror. It has to have some hidden man-hating theme, even if that's not there. Like, that's fine if it is.
Right.
But people just assume, and therefore it's like women's literature as opposed to horror. And not only that, there's this question of what kind of woman would write horror? Women described being judged as weird or disturbed if they were writing horror, whereas male authors would be viewed as cool or brave, like bucking the system. And these judgments following them to job interviews. At least one account said she, an interviewer had found that she'd written this horror story, and there was definitely already this layer of, well, I don't know about this woman.
Wow. That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, horror stories or stories meant to bring a sense of fear have been told for as long as people have been telling stories. And those are the best stories, the ones that kind of become legends. And a lot of these first horror stories weren't told for fun necessarily, but as, of course, cautionary tales. Don't go alone in the dark or you might get eaten. They might also feature a creature, witches, or ghosts to explain things that people don't understand at that time. Do people understand these things at this time? Do we really understand creature, witches, or monsters?
No, just sort of like, you know, like banshees, they think, was that sound coming from swamps or maybe it was a screech owl.
Yeah.
But of course it's banshees.
It's banshees.
Now,
oh, I would assume that too, though, to be fair.
I do assume ghost first, almost always, as you know, Samantha.
I think you're correct. We're definitely haunted. These stories make up a great deal of our foundational folk stories, which, again, we would love to hear the international levels because I can't imagine like how it transitions from culture to culture. And ancient Greek tales told of witches, vampires, and monsters. Yes, and so did religious texts, which we know of maybe more like demons and such.
Yeah. One of my favorite things I've ever learned is that almost every culture has a vampire legend, and almost everyone, I think in everyone except for one, vampires don't like garlic. And all these stories came separately, like originated in separate places, separate times. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Horror for horror's or curiosity's sake emerged in Western literature in the 18th century with the Gothic novel. 1764 novel The Castle Otranto by Horace Walpole often gets the credit for cementing the genre's legitimacy. So maybe not the first book or the first short story, but the first one people were like, oh, this is a book and it deserves respect. At the same time, in France, we see the rise of Roman noir, black novels, and German shudder novels, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And women have been writing horror since the very beginning, but they haven't always gotten the attention or the credit. And we'll get into that and some famous historical examples after we take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Pedigree. True love is always being excited from the first moment you see one another and every time after that. It's taking long walks together in the summer, gazing longingly into each other's eyes and, well, watching their tail wag when they chase a squirrel in the yard.
The Pedigree brand asked about believing in love at first sight. And honestly, the answer is yes. And I know you listeners know my love, Peaches Gertrude McPherson, whom I've talked about so much, and she really was love at first sight. But I will tell you, that it took a long time for me to find her. I actually was looking for a good 2 years before I stumbled upon her picture from my local shelter and knew the moment I saw her that she was the one. And the minute I tell you when I saw that picture and I went to meet her out the shelter and I sat with her for a good 20 minutes, y'all, I couldn't leave her. I knew she had to be mine. I knew we belonged together.
Peaches and I are friends as well. We have a good relationship together. So you can find love at first sight with the Pedigree Adoption Drive June 7th to 9th. And the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yeah, so let's get into history. Historically, a lot of horror written by women has been lost to time and not preserved in the same way male works were, of course. And many of these works were not discovered until long after the author's death, usually when a male writer of acclaim highlights the story. Some of these authors are believed to have literally starved to death. However, it was not all doom and gloom. A lot of women succeeded in the realm of writing horror, particularly gothic horror, as the genre emerged and gained popularity.
And this popularity was only possible due to the introduction of new technologies that allowed for the printing of cheap magazines and newspapers to distribute these stories to a wider audience. And to fill these pages required a lot of stories. And in the early days, women were largely the ones providing these stories. It was an appealing career path for women who didn't have a lot of opportunities at the time. Though the world of publishing was largely dominated by men, women could still get works published by writing under a gender-neutral or masculine-sounding pen name, or anonymously, or with a Mrs. So people knew you had a husband to keep you in line. You weren't such a big threat. And not to say that some women didn't do those things. It was just easier to get published by doing those things. Not only that, strict genres weren't so much a thing yet. So there was a lot of freedom to try all kinds of stories. Like you could write a horror story one day and a romantic story the other day, and nobody really questioned, oh, you should stick to your lane. And these women did, even within the horror genre. Ghosts, werewolves, vampires, banshees, cosmic terrors, mad scientists, dark, dread-inducing stories. Several of the horror stories written by women from this time did include feminine themes. Womanhood, social and class movements, feminism, domesticity, motherhood, children, childlessness, and the self-worth of childless women. All of this stuff in these early horror stories. Examples include What Was the Matter by Elizabeth Stuart Phelps, The Dream Baby by Olivia Howard Dunbar, The Giant Wistaria by Charlotte Perkins Gilman, The Wind in the Rosebush by Mary Wilkins Freeman, Twilight by Marjorie Bowen, Transmigration by Dora Sigerson Shorter, and so many more. A lot of these are in the public domain, by the way, if you'd like to go check them out. At this time, most horror stories were written by women. The gothic genre owes its existence to women, and the audience was primarily women, too. In the early days of its existence, gothic horror was dismissed as essentially chick lit, which still problematic to dismiss chick lit.
Yes.
Neither is good.
Mm-mm. So many of these women were able to support a family and fairly quickly by writing, especially in the wake of a loss of a husband who'd previously provided support. Anne Radcliffe, who wrote primarily gothic fiction, was a top paid author in the 1790s. Her most famous work was a supernatural tale following a female protagonist in a castle called The Mysteries of Udolpho. Some consider this the first bestseller, which maybe that should be on our list. Most of her works did focus on dynamic, interesting female characters, which, of course, was a rarity for the time, which even is a rarity to this day. For some unknown reason, she stopped writing at the age of 32, and there are several probably untrue stories around her life and death, which is even better. Like, I'm like, how do you not love that?
Like, aura of mystery around her.
So, from CUNY Brooklyn, quote, little was or is known about Radcliffe's life, so not surprisingly, apocryphal stories sprang up about her. It was reported that she had gone mad as a result of her dreadful imagination and been confined to an asylum, that she had been captured as a spy in Paris, or that she ate rare pork chop before retiring to stimulate nightmares for her novels. And several times, she was falsely rumored to be dead.
Sounds like a fascinating woman.
I mean, why have we not talked about her? We talk about Emily Dickinson all the time with her past.
Yeah, I want to know why did people think she was a spy in Paris?
That is such a stretch from eating raw pork.
To have nightmares. And I also just love dreadful imagination. That's so good.
It's so good.
But okay, no history of women writing horror would be complete without mentioning Mary Shelley. In 1818, Shelley published Frankenstein, a novel that continues to influence our pop culture to this day. I was thinking about this. It had such a huge impact. Mm-hmm. I still hear it mentioned. Like, just recently, I heard it on a late night talk show. And then I was thinking about Darth Vader in, because of course, in Revenge of the Sith, and how when he comes to life, it's like Frankenstein.
Yeah. It's still mentioned, and it's still a popular costume. Like, it is lived, for sure.
Oh, yeah. It lives!
It lives! Oh, I'm brand on that one.
Shelley was 18 when she wrote this, and allegedly she wrote it in response to Lord Byron's ghost story challenge. So this is kind of a legendary tale in itself, that after rain kept Byron and Shelley inside with three other vacationing friends, they told each other ghost stories. And then Byron was like, I challenge all of thee to write a scarier ghost story than these. And she and one other person did. The fact that this was written by a woman did cause, surprises no one, I'm sure, a fair share of controversy in its day. The British critic's 1818 review of the book claimed, quote, if our authoress can forget the gentleness of her sex, it is no reason why we should, and we shall therefore dismiss the novel without further comment. Wow.
Such dicks.
Yeah, excellently said, Samantha. So verbose you are. Still, the book was successful and earned her the nickname The Mother of Horror, which is an excellent nickname. Mm-hmm. Many consider this the first science fiction novel, an epic pseudoscience tale about a monster destroying its creator. That fateful rainy day, by the way, also allegedly led to Polidori's The Vampire, or The Vampire, perhaps, in 1819, and the 1986 movie Gothic. And there's also the movie Mary Shelley, which Hulu keeps telling me I should watch.
Is that the one with Julia Roberts?
There's probably more than one. This one, I think this one has Ellie Fanning.
Oh, well, there's one with
Julia
Roberts,
it's like 2013.
Too.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Look at that.
And I think Al Pacino. No, not Al Pacino. Robert De Niro is one of them, too.
Wow.
Girl.
Okay.
Yeah. So in the 19th century, Irish writer Charlotte Riddle churned out several short stories and novellas, primarily about ghosts and haunted house. Originally, she published under masculine pen names like F.G. Trafford and R.V.M. Sparling, and she was quite prolific and popular at the time, and she started writing as a means to support her mother, which is even better.
And we have Marie Corelli. She was the top paid author in the 1890s. Writing was one avenue that women could receive pay equal to men's, particularly if their pen name was, again, anonymous or allowed people in some way to believe that they were men. Two women who turned to writing out of dire financial need later became some of the most well-known of the time, Charlotte Perkins Gilman and Frances Hodgson Burnett.
And we can't forget two of my favorites, Emily and Charlotte Bronte, who wrote Wuthering Heights and Jane Eyre. And yes, read both of them. Jane Eyre is probably my favorite on the other hand, but it's delightful and are classic examples of the Gothic pieces from this period and very haunting.
Yes. Lots of atmosphere.
So much atmosphere. With names like Heathcliff, come on. And fires, so many fires. But anyway, people were really concerned about women reading this material. I think it was mentioned in the fan fiction two-parter, right?
Yeah. They were worried that it was giving us emotions.
So many emotions. In Jane Austen's 1817 work, Northanger Abbey, mocked women's love of these books. I will say there was this weird rival against the Bronte sisters in Austen. There was, because I love both of them. All of them. I love all of them. But she did mock the love of these books, with protagonist Catherine Morland imagining all sorts of monsters thanks to reading too many horrid books and giving to her feminine curiosity. The idea slowly took hold that women were way too fragile for horror and gothic. And of course, in a genre that had once been perceived as feminine was masculinized. The anxiety wasn't confined to women reading it, but to women writing it, as a lot of the themes, consciously or not, reflected anxiety around the patriarchy and were feminist in nature. Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, no, indeed. And there was also a layer of, oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're silly enough that you'll believe this.
Yes.
You're not smart enough to know that this isn't reality.
Right.
Ugh. The link between feminism and horror strengthened by the end of the 18th century, and women writers used their stories to critique society and push for social change, particularly around issues like motherhood, health, and hysteria. Despite the plethora of examples of women's short stories, gothic novels written by men are what we remember from this period. I had a really hard time. Obviously, there are plenty of examples, but when I went to just a page that was highlighting, I'd say probably 100, almost all of them were men, no joke.
Right.
There are several reasons why this could be. Perhaps novels receive more respect and attention than short stories. Perhaps because these stories dealt with women's and social issues and thus were categorized as women's writing instead of gothic or horror, which again is a problem that remains to this day. But the point is, women were there at the very beginning and they were writing most of this. And then until society was like, nope, that's not ladylike and men should do it. And now it's a respected genre because men are doing it.
Right. And should be paid more for it, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Well, that's about our history. But we do have some more modern day examples we wanted to share with you. But first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Pedigree. True love is always being excited from the first moment you see one another and every time after that. It's taking long walks together in the summer, gazing longingly into each other's eyes and, well, watching their tail wag when they chase a squirrel in the yard.
The Pedigree brand asked about believing in love at first sight. And honestly, the answer is yes. And I know you listeners know my love, Peaches Gertrude McFuzzin, whom I've talked about so much, and she really was love at first sight. But I will tell you that it took a long time for me to find her. I actually was looking for a good 2 years before I stumbled upon her picture from my local shelter and knew the moment I saw her that she was the one. And the minute I tell you when I saw that picture and I went to meet her out the shelter and I sat with her for a good 20 minutes, y'all, I couldn't leave her. I knew she had to be mine. I knew we belonged together.
Peaches and I are friends as well. We have a good relationship together. So you can find love at first sight with the Pedigree Adoption Drive June 7th to 9th, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. So, unfortunately, in our more modern times, there are still more men writing horror than women, but there are women producing some amazing stuff. And this is slowly changing, that it's not super weird that women are writing horror. And we thought we'd leave you with a few examples if you want to check them out. Starting with Shirley Jackson, who wrote things like The Haunting of Hill House, which I know a lot of you are probably familiar with the Netflix show. Daphne du Maurier, whose works were adapted into films 12 times, including several by Hitchcock, like The Birds, and Nicholas Roeg's Don't Look Now, which we mentioned in our witches episode about Hocus Pocus and the witches. Joyce Carol Oates, a Pulitzer Prize winning author who has written over 100 books.
Right. Of course, Octavia Butler, who you love. Yeah?
I love Octavia Butler. Yes. It's one of the few times... Well, no, that's not true at all. I was going to say it's one of the few times that an assigned book became one of my favorite books. I've actually generally liked every book I've been assigned to read. But I was assigned to read some of her books in college, her science fiction books, and I loved them and I still love them to this day.
Yeah. And she has a lot of horror in her science fiction, which I do feel like go hand in hand oftentimes. And she frequently addressed the horrors of systemic racism in her work, which is awesome, as it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Asa Nanami authored things like The Body and Now You're One of Us. Lisa Tuttle, which, by the way, I thought you were saying Lisa Turtle, and I was really caught up in Saved by the Bell. Anyway, Lisa Tuttle, an 80s horror fiction writer who also wrote Encyclopedia of Feminism.
Yeah.
Which we might need to read.
Yeah. Then there's Linda Addison, who in 2001 became the first Black woman to be awarded the Bram Stoker Award for her work Consumed, Reduced to Beautiful Gray Ashes. And in 2017, the Horror Writers Association chose her for their Lifetime Achievement Award, which is, in the horror world, that's like the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I'm just going to put out there, I tried to get to the bottom of, I don't know, have you heard the rumor that Bram Stoker didn't really write Dracula, but a woman did?
Yes, actually I did.
I tried to get to the bottom of that and I could not find the answer, but we are aware of it.
Right. There's also like the rumor, well, not the rumor, that yes, he did write it, but because it was legend and had already been there, that there were other rights that he took from.
Right. Yeah, we mentioned it, oh gosh, that feels like centuries ago, in our serial killer episode, because we talked about kind of the inspiration around it, and there was a woman behind that.
Right.
But anyway, there's also Carmen Maria Machado, author of Her Body and Other Parties. And then there's Tanana Reeve Du, who on top of writing horror also teaches classes on it, including a UCLA class called The Sunken Place, Racism, Survival, and Black Horror Aesthetic.
We need her on the show.
Sounds awesome. And then there's Helen Oyeyemi, author of things like White is for Witching and Icarus Girl.
Right. And I guess we should put in there Anne Rice because, yes, she did write many of the vampire series.
Yeah.
And she's one of the probably more popular ones because of those vampire series, as, you know, Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt comes together to seduce Kristen Stewart. I don't remember.
No, Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, whatever. See, there's so many vampire movies. And I love vampire genres. Please don't hate me. Kristen Dunst, there it is, and her young self. But yeah, so we have to put her in there because she did. She definitely created a whole level of sexy
vampire.
Well, no, I mean, vampires have always been sexualized, but in this level, when you have iconic stars like Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt playing the main characters, you can't help but notice. Right? No? Okay. I'm going to stop now.
I've never read an Anne Rice book, but I would definitely say she would be one of the first that if you were trying to list popular horror writers, people would think of her, a first woman, I would say, a lot of times.
Yeah.
And she did do a lot to popularize, specifically, vampire horror.
That's a whole series.
Yep. For all the older examples we mentioned, most, if not all of them, are featured in the book Weird Women, Classic Supernatural Fiction by Groundbreaking Female Writers, 1852 to 1923, by Leslie S. Klinger and Lisa Morton. So, can go check that out too. And I'm so happy. I feel like I have a whole repertoire of books I want to check out now.
Yeah, for sure. I know when we were talking again about our monthly reading, you're like, I have a whole list. I think we should read one of these. And I was like, okay, cool, cool, cool. Let's do this.
Yeah. Well, I was reading the synopses for a lot of these, and everyone, I was like, ooh, ooh.
I think they're good and original for sure.
I gotta do it. I gotta do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And for this one, since it is October, we thought we would close out with a reading.
Oh, Annie, what have you done to us?
A dramatic reading.
Oh, it's a dramatic? Okay, here we go.
Yeah, it's going to be very dramatic.
So we are going to read from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. So go ahead and light your candle, sit in the dark, and here we go. Is that how we start?
Yes.
It was on a dreary night of November that I beheld the accomplishments of my toils. With an anxiety that almost amounted to agony, I collected the instruments of life around me that I might infuse a spark of being into the lifeless thing that lay at my feet. It was already 1 a.m. The rain pattered dismally against the panes, and my candle was nearly burnt out. When, by the glimmer of the half-extinguished light, I saw the dull yellow eye of the creature open. It breathed hard, and a convulsive motion agitated its limbs.
How can I describe my emotions at this catastrophe, or how delineate the wretch whom with such infinite pains and care I had endeavored to form? His limbs were in proportion, and I had selected his features as beautiful. Beautiful! Great God! His yellow skin scarcely covered the work of muscles and arteries beneath. His hair was of a lustrous black and flowing, his teeth of a pearly whiteness, but these luxuriances only formed a more horrid contrast with his watery eyes that seemed almost of the same color as the dun-white sockets in which they were set, his shriveled complexion and straight black lips.
The different accidents of life are not so changeable as the feelings of human nature. I had worked hard for nearly 2 years for the sole purpose of infusing life into an inanimate body. For this, I had deprived myself of rest and health. I had desired it with an ardor that far exceeded moderation. But now that I had finished, the beauty of the dream vanished, and breathless horror and disgust filled my heart. Unable to endure the aspect of the being I had created, I rushed out of the room and continued a long time traversing my bedchamber, unable to compose my mind to sleep. At length, lassitude succeeded to the tumult I had believed endured, and I threw myself on the bed in my clothes, endeavoring to seek a few moments of forgetfulness.
But it was in vain. I slept indeed, but I was disturbed by the wildest dreams. I thought I saw Elizabeth in the bloom of health, walking in the streets of Ingolstadt. Delighted and surprised, I embraced her, but as I imprinted the first kiss on her lips, they became livid with the hue of death. Her features appeared to change, and I thought that I had held the corpse of my dead mother in my arms. A shroud enveloped her form, and I saw grave worms crawling in the folds of the flannel. I started from my sleep with horror. A cold dew covered my forehead. My teeth chattered, and every limb became convulsed. When, by the dim and yellow light of the moon, as it forced its way through the window shutters, I beheld the wretch, the miserable monster whom I had created. He held up the curtain of the bed, and his eyes, if eyes they may be called, were fixed on me. His jaws opened, and he muttered some inarticulate sounds, while a grin wrinkled his cheeks. He might have spoken, but I did not hear. One hand was stretched out, seemingly to detain me, but I escaped and rushed downstairs. I took refuge in the courtyard belonging to the house which I inhabited, where I remained during the rest of the night, walking up and down in the greatest agitation, listening attentively, catching and fearing each sound as if it were to announce the approach of the demoniacal corpse to which I had so miserably given life.
Oh, no mortal could support the horror of that countenance. A mummy again endued with animation could not be so hideous as that wretch. I had gazed on him while unfinished. He was ugly then, but when these muscles and joints were rendered capable of motion, it became a thing such as even Dante could not have conceived.
I passed the night wretchedly. Sometimes my pulse beat so quickly and hardly that I felt the palpitation of every artery. At others, I nearly sank to the ground through languor and extreme weakness. Mingled with this horror, I felt the bitterness of disappointment. Dreams that had been my food and pleasant rest for so long a space were now become a hell to me. And the change was so rapid, the overthrow so complete.
Finn.
Applause, Samantha.
I remember reading this in my 9th or 10th grade AP English class and loving, because we did literature.
Yeah.
European literature as our AP English class, I think. And I loved this book and loved everything about this book because it was so different. Don't get me wrong. I still love Jane Austen. I still love the Bronte sisters. But this one was unique in itself. It was so small. It was a short read, but it was perfect.
I like how it's structured too with different, like there's letters being written to different people.
Right.
And the point of view switches. And yes, this is in the public domain. So if you would like to read it, you absolutely can. And we hope that that gave you a little taste of something spooky for the season. If you have any horror book suggestions or short stories or whatever, please send them our way. Our email is stephaniamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Instagram at @stephmomnevertoldyou or on Twitter at @momstuffpodcast. Thanks as always to our super producer, Andrew Howard.
Happy Halloween.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Pedigree.
If you've been looking for love at first sight, it is closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.